Hello, I'm Danny Aiken, president of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. We want to thank you for listening to this chapel message. Our mission at Southeastern is to seek to glorify the Lord Jesus Christ by equipping students to serve the church and fulfill the Great Commission. We hope that you enjoy this chapel message and that you will visit our website. It's www.sebts.edu. There you can learn more about our school and what the Lord is doing here. We hope you enjoy the message. Thank you for being a part of what we're doing here.
The Apostle Paul said, I therefore, prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling with which you are called. Ephesians 4:1. He went on to say in Ephesians chapter 5, for you were once darkness. Notice he doesn't say in darkness. He said you were darkness. But now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Ephesians 5:2. I would like for us to think together over the next few minutes about what does it mean to converse with culture. And I thought as we think of that, that I would talk on reflections on culture. You're here today because at some level you consider Christianity to really be important. You want to engage culture in faithful conversation. There have been a number of workshops and presentations to help you in that. In the days ahead, many of you will be leaders in local churches. Others of you will be sought out for guidance and ask the question, what does it mean to be salt and light in this world? And I am honestly so encouraged as I look out over the auditorium this afternoon. You're young. You have energy. I believe you have a very deep desire to make Christ known across the street and around the world. It is true that most of you will surpass me in effectiveness in the work of the kingdom. I did not come to Christ until I was 20 years of age, living in New England, accepting pietism as the Christian norm, bound by legalism as a means to spirituality. And I only began thinking about these things that you're thinking about now, just a few years ago. I grew up on a small dairy farm, where from a very early age, I worked every day beside the men. I was never encouraged by those around me, and I say that is no disrespect to my parents or otherwise, but I was never encouraged to think about education. I lived in a community where the gospel was not known. You could drive 50 miles in any direction of my home, and there was no gospel witness. I believe it is true when I say that I graduated number 2 in my high school class. That would be second from the bottom. I did not walk onto a college campus until I was 34 years old. And it was really a case of the country bumpkin coming to town. I got a rather late start in life and often have to work twice as hard to be half as good. But you, may God bless you. You have such an early start on these things, thinking about what matters. When I was your age, those things never crossed my mind. So when I say I'm greatly encouraged by you being here, I do not say it casually. Now, conversing with culture is an important topic of investigation. And now it has been raised. We cannot pretend it has not, as Paul Helm reminded us. Reflecting on what we mean by conversing with culture, I wondered, is this a call to action, telling us that we should converse with culture? Or is it a call to reflect on what does it mean to converse with culture? Maybe it's both. And I will focus on the latter, reflecting on precisely what is culture and how does that inform on how the church might converse with culture in some legitimate fashion, or if I might say, in a faithful fashion. Hence the title, Reflections on Culture. In fact, it's not simply reflections on culture, but reflections on culture in light of who we are as the Church of Jesus Christ. That is, who am I and how then should I live? The truth is that not everybody in the Church agrees on the subject of culture engagement. Some question if we should even countenance such an idea as this. On that position, I'm going to say very little because I think the Bible is rather clear. Jesus explicitly tells us that we are to be salt and light in this world in Matthew chapter 5. I'm going to take it as a given that the Church should engage culture. But when the Scripture says, "Let your light so shine," I want us to think of what does that mean in light of a cultural engagement? What does it mean if we are light? Now, those aware of the evangelical history of the evangelical world know that, at least for the first part of the 20th century, the evangelical church leaned towards rather a narrow view of what it meant to present the gospel. I remember that when I came to Christ, we did not think about cultural involvement. In the 20th century, few visioned the gospel in broader terms. Few thought of the gospel as teaching Christ, the Lord of all of life. But about 50 years ago, roughly in the mid-60s, there was a stirring in the evangelical world precipitated by a cultural revolution at that time. And those of us who lived through that wondered if America and the world would ever survive what took place then. Yet, in the midst of those times, there were men such as Francis Schaeffer, who were used by God to awaken the culturally slumbering evangelical mind. Reaching back to the Reformers and beyond, Schaeffer reintroduced the notion that Christianity touched every piece of life, not just the religious side. In his early ministry, Schaeffer at Le Brie at Waymo, Switzerland, in some way modeled what it meant to see all of life through the Christian understanding of reality. He understood that the Bible gave the only answer to the wonder of man as well as to the ugliness and the cruelty of man. Now, Schaeffer died in 1984. And unfortunately, I think, although his ministry suggested a promising new day for evangelicalism, I think it has turned out rather disappointing in the end. In spite of all the Christian books and talks given and DVDs produced and conferences held on engaging the culture, I still think we are very far from where we ought to be as evangelicals. What has emerged over that time is a rather cloudy and a confused vision of what faithful engagement of culture might look like. I believe our intentions are good and right, but for some reason, many evidence a lack of clarity in why and how we should engage culture. The difference between what Francis Schaeffer did and what many evangelicals are doing today is really miles apart. Of course, it's a different day, and we would not expect it to look precisely as it did in his day. Still, the point of difference is that Schaeffer began with a strong theological foundation, which led him to see the importance of engaging culture, answering honest questions with theologically based answers. In this case, theology was the cause, and cultural engagement was the effect. He did not first begin with the idea he should engage culture. He first allowed the truth of Scriptures. And I would say not just a verse, but the whole of the Bible, the whole thrust of what it meant to be a Christian, to shape his thinking, which led him to engage culture. And long before he went to Europe, he was doing that. He not only exhibited a commitment to the Church, he demonstrated a clarity of theological thinking regarding the true nature of culture. He understood what many miss today, and hence the purpose of a conference like this. He realized that cultural artifacts, such as art, sculpture, architecture, music, and so forth, actually provided a window through which a worldview of a community could be understood. In addition, he also thought that Christians themselves could be good culture makers, as they understood all of life to be under the lordship of Jesus Christ. That is, the Christian could produce art, music, and so forth that spoke of the Christian worldview, both in its form and its content. That it would be something other than simply a baptized version of world influence culture. That it would reflect the lordship of Christ from creating to the presenting. Engaging culture for Schaeffer was not merely an add-on to ministry, but a way of life for the church. It was part and parcel of what it meant to be a witness of Christ to the world. Today we still have the worldview terminology, but what's missing so often is the theological demonstration and the cultural discernment. Too many evangelicals talk about cultural engagement, but it's so often divorced from the church, not the ministry of the church, but the life of the church. Here I mean the total Christian community. Unfortunately, in the mind of many Christians, Christian ministry is really fragmented in the sense that preaching is one thing and cultural engagement is, well, that's something else. Or the art should only be overtly Christian and only be used as a tool for evangelism, instead of seeing good art itself as a witness to a Christian view of reality. Hence, the artist seldom understands her Christian responsibility in the arts, and the church preaches as if the arts and the gospel were two totally unrelated matters. Hence, the life of the church gets separated from those in the arts. And this includes architecture, I would say, which we might be able to witness in some of the buildings we build. It seems, however, from the point of view that the church is to be salt and light, that faithful living is about ordering all of life, up and down, private and public, preaching and living, all according to the foundational principles of the kingdom. It is a way of life where God is our center and our circumference. That is, faith in God is not only the ordering principle of our lives, it also the defining limits of what is acceptable in the life that's lived for God. And this includes our function as culture makers. Conversing with culture, however, must not lead to subverting the church. Robert Betzel has reminded us, and I quote, "We must ever be mindful that even though we may use cultural opportunities around us, the church can also be infected by that very culture. C.S. Lewis did well to remember us that every road out of Jerusalem is also a road into Jerusalem." This is all too possible, and when it happens, it does so under the cover of what appears to be quite innocuous to most of us. It's extremely subtle, and I suggest that maybe we reread C.S. Lewis's Screwtape Letters to see just how subtle this subverting work of the spirit of the age can be. Or consider the words of Peter Berger, who says that he who dines with the devil of modernity should do so with a long-handled spoon. These are timely warnings, I think, to the church, especially as we think about engaging culture. It puts the church on alert that it might avoid being captive by the very culture it seeks to engage, to be faithful in all things. I think, therefore, before we consider what engaging culture looks like, we must first consider what the church is. We must understand who we are. What does God require of us in our relationship to Him? It is this that will provide the necessary theological commitments to inform us on what might and might not be permissible in our engagement of culture. It will provide us with the proper tools of analysis to understand what is on the surface, but also important assumptions that lie beneath. So first I want us to think about, who are we? And then, how should we live? As we reflect on conversing on culture, first we must have a firm commitment to what does it mean to be the church. You may be thinking, oh, well, my, that's pretty elementary. I can take that. Of course, all Christians know what the church is, but I'm not so sure, at least judging from what I see. Now, I may be overstating my case, and you can be a judge of that, but I wonder if evangelicals are experiencing something of an identity crisis these days of what it means to be the church. Maybe this explains why we have such an anemic understanding of precisely what engaging the culture looks like, because we're not really sure who we are. I believe I can make a very strong case for the conclusion that the rationalism of modernity and the radical relativism of postmodernity has had rather a subtle negative effect on how we as the church understand ourselves. In fact, I think the idea of the church has suffered from what I would call a hollowing effect. The term remains, but the power of its reality has diminished drastically. Precisely what does it mean for us to be a part of the church? Not how we become a part of the church, we know that, but what does it mean in the terms of how I live? The word church, as you know, carries with it the idea of called out, and as used in the context, it's being called out of a world system. Not physically, but rather that we are no longer to live according to the world system, and we do not belong to the world system, but we belong to Christ and His kingdom. We have almost 2,000 years of history, some periods brighter than others, of course, but we must never ignore that who we are in this moment of time is far larger than any present manifestation of our groups. The church is historically and scripturally defined, not merely by a large number of individuals with a similar doctrinal beliefs doing something Christian. We are the church, a dynamic whole with one head and individual parts, 1 Corinthians 13 and 14. According to the Apostle Paul, the church is the pillar and ground of the truth, which means at every level, on every front, in every way, truth is our foundation, our guide, our identity. It is not our individual goods that are to define us, but our crucial role collectively as truth bearers in all things, including conversing with culture, Christ, Lord of all of life. As the church we are, if you please, the called out ones, the separated ones, saints in the best sense of the word, separated unto God. We are called out of the world, but not called out of culture. Paul points out that our calling is that we have been called out of darkness into the kingdom of his dear Son, Colossians 1:13, and that we should live worthy of the Lord, Colossians 1:10. We have been called by the gospel of Christ and his Spirit, 2 Thessalonians 2:14. The Spirit speaks of this as a holy calling, 2 Timothy 1:9. As a part of this holy calling, our affections in life are to be trained by the Word of God and His Spirit, by one another living in community in faithful obedience to the Word. It is from this position, as saints, that we must converse with culture. Our citizenship is in heaven, and that's not just about where we go when we die. It is to determine how you and I are to live in this country. We are a distinct group within humanity, and our distinction is owed to our calling, which is a work of grace, not our performance. We are called to walk worthy of our calling. This means that while conversing with culture, we must not forget who we are. We're saints, those who've been called out, and we must live according to that holy calling. We're not our own. And our bodies are to be a living sacrifice, according to Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. They belong to God, and we are to glorify Him with our body, according to 1 Corinthians 6:20. As it is our body, which is the temple of the Holy Spirit, 1 Corinthians 6:9. Now, this is no small matter. No. This requires deep reflection. If this is true, what does it mean? What does it require of me in my station of life? Any faithful conversing with culture requires no less than us to think deeply on the reality of who we are in Christ. Whatever conversing with culture looks like in our day, it's not an individual operation, nor something that would redefine us who we are historically. That is, while we may do many things as individually, it must not be independent of who we are as the Church of Jesus Christ. One Lord, one faith, one baptism. Historically defined, divinely called, graciously accepted in the Beloved. Furthermore, conversing with culture must not be something that we add on as a separate ministry. It must be a part of the life of the church. In fact, we must see our conversing with culture as a part of our individual life worship. Well, I think I will hear no objection when I say that all of life is to be lived as worship to God. This means that Sunday morning should not be an interruption in our lives so that we can worship, but simply a continuation of a week of worship. Here I don't mean that we spent all week singing hymns, reading the Bible, or praying, though those are really good things to do. Rather, our calling out encompasses all of life, each day lived unto God. As the Puritan William Law put it, if we are to follow Christ, it must be in our common way of spending every day. All the virtues and holy dispositions of Christianity are not ours unless they are the virtues and dispositions of our ordinary life. This is what I have in mind when I say worship as a way of life, a way of life that requires sacrifice. And in speaking of sacrifice, I mean something more than leaving your home for a faraway place, or giving an extra $100 in the offering plate, or going on a short-term mission trip. Now, those may be all well and good. I'm just saying that's not what I have in mind at this point. I am thinking of sacrifice by what we reject of this world's ordering principles. Instead, ordering our lives according to the kingdom, which is more than merely going to church and doing things to be a witness to the world. It's more than just living moral lives. Now, of course, it's not less than this, but it's surely much more. It is not being shaped by the philosophies of this world, which come to us in the most attractive and subtle fashion. It's refusing to be taken hostage to the frantic buying and selling as those who have no hope beyond the grave engage. Conversing with culture must begin with understanding who we are as the church, and intentionally living in a conscious way as ones who belong to God. Forget who we are, to whom we belong, or to what we are called, and our conversing with culture will lose its necessary orientation and definition, and in the end will be unauthentic. Our conversing with culture must not be in substance or in appearance something we only do as a work of evangelism. Of course, it is that. Don't misunderstand me. But it must be a part of the outflowing of a total life lived for God as a part of His church. A total life is what makes our art and our cultural artifacts attractive to man and true to God. However, equally important to conversing with culture is a proper understanding of culture, not just understanding the church. Now, failure on this particular point explains in part what creates so much controversy on the one hand, and on the other hand explains how our good intentions of conversing with culture end up as subversive to what ultimately we want, namely to reach the nations for Christ. Precisely, what is it that this word culture signifies? When I say culture, what comes to your mind? I suspect probably very little of definite content, if you're like many of us. Precisely to what does this word point? Of course, the word comes from Latin and meaning to cultivate. We all use it. The church uses it. You find it in titles of books. We hear about the culture wars and on and on. But are we all talking about the same thing? I suggest the answer is no. In truth, the word means just about anything that's not the church. We all know that when something means everything, it means nothing. It is, in fact, this ambiguity of the word that has led so much confusion and failed attempts, I think, at engaging culture. We're simply not sure where we're going. You might remember in Alice in Wonderland when Alice says, "Just shy of push, puss." She began rather timidly, as she did not know whether it would like that name. However, it just grinned a little wider. "Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here?" "Well, that depends a good deal on where you want to get to," said the cat. "Oh, I don't much care where," said Alice. Well, then it doesn't matter which way you go, said the cat. So long as you get somewhere, of course, added Alice. Well, you see, if we don't know what culture is, we don't know where we're going, then I guess just any direction will do. Often in the public square, for example, culture wars only refer to moral issues. But surely culture is more than that. The ambiguity of this word also gives us the idea that somehow the church and culture are on opposite sides. For example, we talk about culture wars. I think I first became aware of our very slippery use of the word culture when I started lecturing in Eastern Europe. To think this way reveals a skewed view of both culture and it misrepresents the relationship of the church to culture. I think you can see now how this might very well impact the way we think about conversing with culture. Now let's be clear. As terms, church and culture belong to different categories within reality. The word church, as we know, simply defines a group within humanity, whereas the word culture refers to what human beings in general do with this world. The church is a product of God's grace. Culture is a product of human activity. As Andy Crouch pointedly says, that culture is what we make of the world. Here he means the stuff of the world. That is, culture is what human beings create. Roger Scruton expands on this to say, culture is the quintessence of all the natural goods of the world and of those gifts and qualities while becoming to man lie beyond the immediate spheres of his needs and wants. In other words, culture includes art and music and architecture and literature and social institutions and so forth, things that are produced by human beings, how they organize their world. And this is true of Christians and non-Christians. Culture refers to the way we order and represent life. Culture reveals one's view of reality. In this way, different spheres of culture will embody different values. The church is a culture maker, which contributes to the larger culture circle of any society. In this way, the church is part of culture, and its culture making should reveal our values, our view of reality. There was a time when our national culture was well represented by a Christian culture making, and that which was more or less sprang out of a Judeo-Christian worldview. Not so much anymore. This, of course, has weakened the witness of the church as it has retreated from serious culture making and has narrowly defined the gospel. We want to engage culture, but we fail to be serious Christian culture makers. This seems unfortunate to me. It seems to suggest that Christianity restricts true humanness in some way, rather than giving it a robust and true expression in life in general. The church, remember, is made up of human beings, and as such should reflect their humanness by giving true definition to the human propensity to create. This is something Christians share with all humanity. It is within the nature of humanity to create music, to build, to adorn, to write, to beautify, and so forth. We do not learn this. This is who we are as human beings, made in the image of God. True of both the Christian and the non-Christian. And it goes beyond the matter of survival. It's the desire, the propensity, if you please, to create for pleasure and to create in many different ways, from writing music to putting a flower in a vase on a table. This is what we call culture. This is a mark of humanity. And Christianity, I think, should reflect this humanness with a distinctive mark on its culture making. Unfortunately, much of what comes forth today from secular culture lacks beauty. This is because it embodies naturalism, not Christian theism. And instead of informing and encouraging the best in humanity, it assaults our moral senses, stirs us up emotionally for a moment, then leaves us empty the next moment, emptying and longing for the next emotional fix. Of course, this is all naturalism has to offer. But Christianity, yes, that should produce something more inviting, more beautiful, more engaging, more satisfying. But when we as Christians think of cultural artifacts as only a way to reach the world, I fear it results in very poor cultural artifacts. A Christian culture maker must give thought to producing cultural artifacts that first are creations worthy as an offering to God, bursting forth with power and beauty of redeemed humanity. For the Christian, conversing with culture means, well, at least, producing cultural artifacts that reflect beauty and touch the best in humanity, that which embodies what it means to be a Christian, culture making that speaks to the longing of the human heart. This means it will look very different often from the culture making of our current culture. This is because they are arising out of two diametrically opposing worldviews, and the artifacts reflect them. Conversing with culture is not about competing with the culture of the world on its own grounds, but on a totally different grounds: redemption in Christ. I think there is one central mistake that Christians have made that tends to minimize our efforts in conversing with culture. And this mistake is confusing the idea of culture with the notion of the world. That is, at least from a Christian perspective, the world and the word culture are related, but they're not synonymous. The word world is used in the Bible in a negative way, speaks of the spirit of this age. And John uses it in that way when he tells us, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world, in 1 John 2:15. It speaks of the ways of the God of this age who seeks to blind the eyes of man, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ should shine in unto them. 2 Corinthians 4:3. And this is done by its cultural artifacts to a large degree. It is the spirit of the age as manifest in cultural artifacts that Christians are to avoid and to be a voice against, not the idea of culture itself. When Christians confuse culture and the world, one of two extremes seems to me to take place. One, the world makes inroads into the church, or two, the church isolates itself from culture making altogether. In the first case, the church thinks that culture is something neutral. Therefore, it is uncritical in accepting any cultural forms and styles. In this case, the church thinks, for example, that music, art, architecture, so forth, are neutral, and so, well, anything goes. It's only culture. Oh, and culture is good. This results in an uncritical assumption, acceptance of all cultural manifestations unless they're explicitly unchristian. That is, it fails to see, that is, the church fails to see, that the cultural artifacts are the embodiment of the values and the views of reality. Too often the church simply mimics the cultural expressions, which are really the embodiment of the spirit of the age. At this point, the cultural artifacts produced by the Christian tend only to be copies of the cultural artifacts around them, but cannot be sustained by a Christian worldview. One could see how this could smuggle, of course quite unintentionally, naturalistic assumptions into the church. Eventually, this may create, either a theological muting to minimize the conflict or radical purging of culture engagement altogether. In the second case, the church thinks that culture is the world. And John says, don't love the world. Here the church avoids all culture making, limiting its cultural involvement to only preaching. On this count, all evangelism takes place either in the church building or in a way that is divorced from the realities of life, and when cultural artifacts are produced, they tend to be rather stiff and unauthentic. Of course, preaching is right and good, but regeneration restores, at least to some measure, what was lost in the fall. Now man is in a position to make something of the world's stuff in the best sense of the world that can glorify God. Not just in our songs, but in our architecture. Our regeneration is not just about waiting for heaven, but to show how heaven thinks on earth now. Thinking this way, The church as a culture maker can show the power of regeneration and how it applies to all of life, and hence expands its witness to include culture making that exhibits the best in humanity and Christian thinking. Now, I know that we're all called to not love the world. That's true. And we must be constantly reminded of that. However, on the one hand, when the church confuses culture as being synonymous with the world, there is almost always a withdrawal from any concern, either for culture making or even conversation with culture. On the other hand, those who somehow divorce the discussion of culture from the world make another mistake. They conclude that contemporary cultural artifacts are purely neutral and bear no scrutiny, which means anything goes as long as there's not an explicit conflict with the scriptures. In both cases, this lack of clarity has led to errors on opposite ends of the spectrum. Culture grows thin when its artifacts are produced under the influence of the spirit of the age. But let us be clear, the problem is not with culture itself, but with the spirit and philosophies that are embedded in the spheres of culture, such as film and music and architecture and so forth. See, it's not the culture that we stand against, it's the spirit of the age as manifest in culture that we are to stand against. Now, when this happens, those cultural spheres, that is when they're moved by the spirit of the age, they will reflect often corruption and ugliness in their cultural artifacts. I'm saying usually, not always. When the spirit of the age becomes the major producer of culture in all spheres, the national culture will actually reflect that very thing. In the absence of culture making under the spirit of Christ, the community then at large has no good examples of culture making before it and is left without a public witness to the truth in its culture. Today we often see the spirit of the age manifesting itself in the arts, technology, architecture, music, and so forth, as it is often, not always, ugly and distorting, appealing to the worst in human nature, seeing man is only a machine. There is no way, then, that the church can take those manifestations and somehow make them serve Christian ends, because they're unchristian at the core. To attempt to do so, however, is to create a discord between our preaching and our living. It is not, however, the arts or the architecture, the technology or the music from which we must separate, but from the particular manifestations of the spirit of the age in these things. Christians must create their own cultural artifacts, whereby Christian views and values are embedded. The challenge for the church is to produce a Christian manifestation of culture making in all spheres of culture. And I would add that any art form that ignores the transcendent or depreciates the humanness of man must not be considered Christian art, because it's not faithful to God. This is why so much of our contemporary culture making, not just in substance, but in form as well, is really quite anti-Christian. So from a Christian perspective, mimicking pop culture as a model of culture making in order to converse with culture seems to me really to be wrong from the beginning, and I think ultimately ineffective at the end. We must learn something from history. Christians have always been culture makers as part of the witness of the church. Granted, it's been better at some times than others. Still, think of all the great music, the great art, the great architecture, the great literature that came out of faithful Christian culture making. Unfortunately, we do not see much culture making from Christian community of this quality today. That is, not in a way that both in its form and substance reveal Christian worldview. Often in the evangelical world, our architecture is pragmatic. Our music, imitations, our literature, sentimental and without substance, our art, one-dimensional, and our film, stiff and predictable. James Hunter, in his latest book, notes, cultural production in the evangelical world is oriented to the popular. And we shouldn't strike back at Hunter when he makes this kind of a statement. We need to really ask ourselves the question, does he have a point? Maybe we should not accept his solution. I'm not sure that I do. Is it possible that there is precisely because of what Hunter says that we have been rather ineffective in our culture making? Furthermore, I would argue that faithful culture making is part of what it means to converse with culture. We need culture making that reflects the dispositions and the desires shaped and trained by the power of the gospel. If we want to converse with culture, we must not be shaped in any way by the spirit of our age that is shaping so much of the culture around us. Those who argue that the medium and the form have no influence on the message, I think, should rethink their position. We must think deeply about our culture making as being informed by the Spirit of Christ, not just in content, but in form as well. This is what we might call faithful cultural engagement. And I really believe that Christ requires more of us. In fact, I think Christ produces better in us. It is difficult, I realize, but not impossible for the church to offer cultural goods that are more than a repackaging of what society already has. Where Christians are leaders, not followers, innovators, not imitators, in cultural development. To do so, we must understand what it means to be faithful to Christ as members of His church. Secondly, it means to know the difference between the world and culture. It will require that we develop a discerning mind to try the spirits wherever the spirit of the age is embedded and responsible for the shape of cultural artifacts around us. In doing so, to refuse the same, no matter how good they look on the surface or how profitable they appear in the advancement of our proper goals. And in the end, considering our cultural artifacts not simply as tools for evangelism, but exhibitions of what God really intends for humanity. Cultural artifacts that reflect a biblical view of man, reality, and the wonder of creation, the beauty and order, that which resonates with true humanity by piercing through the darkness into the human heart to what is left of the image of God in them. As with Schaeffer, we must realize that culture making is a human thing, not exclusively Christian thing. In fact, culture making is one thing Christians and non-Christians have in common. However, the difference is in worldview orientation, one's view of reality. Christians who function as faithful culture makers will find their work will resonate with non-Christians because it speaks to the humanness in all of us. It will give rise to questions, confront naturalism in its impotence, and suggest a proper framework in which to speak the truth. If we seek faithfulness and then focus on a faithful culture making, even though it may look different from what goes around us, it will still make a real difference because it will confront humanity as understood by Christianity, not naturalism. It will be attractive as well as constructive. We must not fear this. It is part of what I think we have been called to sacrifice. And where our reward is not popularity or financial success, but faithfulness to the truth. Truth as it is in Christ, the person. It would be a mistake to think we can legitimately converse with culture, with those whose ascetic desires and dispositions shaped by the spirit of the age, if our culture making only reflects that same ascetic desire and disposition. We must remember that present dispositions of our contemporary culture have been trained not by Christian values in cultural matters, but that of naturalism, which has led to hedonism. It is true that aesthetic dispositions trained by the spirit of the age find little in common with a culture maker whose aesthetics have been trained by truth. But even those people who are still human beings, and at much more important level, ascetics trained by truth, I believe, will speak to the true humanness in all of us. That's why we still appreciate great art, great literature that came out of the Christian worldview. We are the church who lives under the lordship of Christ, who must rightly understand the true nature of culture. Our culture making in conversation with culture must reflect the desires, the dispositions, the ideals, the interests, the views that are developed and trained by truth. Nothing less will bear the mark, the name of Christian. In conclusion, you are thinking about matters at such an early age, as I said at the beginning. How wonderful. If you continue this path with spiritual passion, intellectual honesty, what lies ahead for you and the church of Jesus Christ fills me with great hope. I am a churchman. And while I think that we are not doing so well on engaging culture thing, I'm convinced that we can. And I know that there are some who are. That we can do better at being light and salt. Not as some appendage to our church ministry, that is to create a new program, start up a new ministry, but as part and parcel of the church life as we live out our calling before a watching world. May I say, it's not a difference about being young or old. This is about understanding who we are as the church and discerning the true nature of culture. For too long, young and old have been having their good intentions diverted at best and subverted at worst by a very light theology that is easily stretched to accommodate the next religious effort to engage culture. Should Jesus not come soon, the work before us requires working together, re-energized by what it means to be the church, our holy calling, living as saints in a world that's stuck in mire without allowing our garments to be spotted by it, engaging in serious culture making such as those in the past, confronting the faulty view of reality and giving an embodiment of the truth in all that we do. It may be challenging, but it's not impossible. May God help us in our discernment of contemporary cultural manifestations. May He give us courage to challenge the cultural norm, wisdom to know how to do it, grace to do it well, and strength to see it to the end. Please, use your strength, your ability, your time to be a faithful culture maker. That means how you preach, how you do business, how you construct buildings, how you govern, judge, sing, play, educate, and so forth. Think with clarity about who you are as a part of the church and your holy calling. Seek to understand the true nature of culture. To do this, we must learn to use the scales of the kingdom, not the measurements of the world. Tether everything we do to substantive theology. Have our dispositions, our desires, our values shaped by what is Christian. Ask God for grace and compassion, for living a life as the pillar and ground of the truth that naturally converses with culture to the glory of God the Father and His Son. I do believe that because of you, if you will walk humbly before your God, resist the distraction of the glitter of the world, expose the deceptions of the spirit of the age, live passionately for His glory with your head filled with truth, your heart bent on Him, your eyes fixed on Christ, then better things for the life and the health of the church lie ahead. To this degree, should it come to pass, I can only say, to God be the glory. Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to this chapel message from Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. If you are thinking about theological education on the undergraduate or graduate level, including doctoral studies, we hope that you consider us. If you also find these chapel messages encouraging and a blessing to your walk with Christ, we hope that you will consider financially supporting Southeastern. Our graduates are literally serving the kingdom across this globe, working to carry the gospel of Jesus Christ to a lost and dying world. Your gifts will help to train more, and they will serve as a worthwhile investment in God's kingdom. You can find more information about attending Southeastern or supporting us financially at www.sebts.edu. We covet your prayers and trust that God will bless every good work you do for His glory. Thank you for joining us in our chapel services.